Welcome to Midlife Bites. This is the podcast that tells the truth about how midlife bites, why it bites, and what happens after it bites. I'm Kirsten Bowes, clinical psychologist, midlife mentor, and someone who believes midlife isn't a crisis. Well, maybe it is a bit. At the very least, it's a reckoning. But it's also an invitation to your reclamation. Here you'll find real talk, real stories, and the kind of conversations that make you feel less alone and more like yourself. And heads up, I get a little bit sweary sometimes, so tune in if you do too, or at least don't get offended if you hear a few choice words. Sometimes it's just me, sometimes it's me chatting with a guest, but either way, it's always going to be raw, relatable, and real. We've all heard the phrase emotional labor, but in midlife, it often feels like emotional labor's older, crankier sister has moved in. And that's often courtesy of perimenopause. So this invisible load, it's the to-do list in your head that no one else sees, the family schedules, the meal planning, the anticipating who's going to need what before they even know it. And for many women, midlife actually doesn't lighten that load. It makes it heavier. Today, we're going to talk about what makes the invisible load so exhausting in midlife, why it's not just about being busy, and what happens when you finally put some of it down. So this is a conversation that I have with a lot of clients. And I know sometimes I finish a day of seeing these amazing midlife women. And I think, wow, we talked about house-oriented stuff a lot. We talked about who does the cooking. We talked about who does the washing, who does the dishwasher, all of those kinds of things. We talk about the frustrations of being the only one that notices that the milk is running out. You know, there's so many seem very mundane kind of things that I often spend my therapy days talking and hearing about from midlife women, and they all kind of add up to this real exhaustion. And, you know, it might seem, geez, is that really therapy? Yes, it is, because there's so many parts of that conversation that are really, really important. But underneath it all is essentially just the reality that at the end of the day, we are the ones that are holding it all together all the time. So what is the invisible load? Now, I'm very sure the invisible load, the mental load, it's not something you have not heard of. It has been kind of talked about for some time now. But, you know, just in case you've been living under a rock, the invisible load is all the mental, emotional, relational. You may not have heard of that one. I'll go into it later. And logistical work required to keep life running. It's about knowing what needs to be done, by when and for whom. And because of that, it makes it a constant behind the scenes mental burden that can lead to burnout and exhaustion. Your head does not stop. And some of it will be conscious. So you're reminding yourself, I must do this, I must do that. Oh, what's going on for that person? Where are they going today? What do I need to do? Geez, I mustn't forget to pick up that on the way home from work. That constant kind of conversation may well be very, very loud and therefore conscious in your head. However, there's a lot of stuff that we hold that still takes up what I like to call real estate in our psyche that isn't always conscious. It may move to the front of our mind as it becomes more relevant or more pressing or more urgent, but it nonetheless may not be in your immediate awareness, and yet it's still there. It's also the communicative, cognitive, and emotional work involved in building and maintaining relationships. And this one's really important to hang on to. It's often the load we carry in trying to maintain harmony in our family homes. It's unpaid, it's unrecognized, and it's unrelenting. Now, this isn't unique to midlife, by no means. Women in particular have been doing this for a very, very long time. And in fact, we can even see in young adult relationships that it's still the young woman who is doing the vast majority of the executive function tasks. That means thinking, planning, organizing, and often the implementation of it. She's the one still doing the vast majority of all of that, even in kind of young adult relationships where both might be working, no kids, that kind of thing. So it's the messaging we get from the get-go. The thing with midlife is it's amplified, and it's amplified for so many reasons. The first reason it's amplified, and, you know, I've kind of just said it, is that because perimenopause, when it arrives, it's rewiring the brain's chemistry, the stress response, and our tolerance for over-functioning. Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean is that when our estrogen kind of is in this overall decline, with it goes a lot of the neurological cushioning that has helped us juggle and caretake. You would have heard me say that estrogen is known as the hormone of accommodation and servitude. It has a biological and evolutionary function of having us prioritize the needs of others. Somehow the species has to survive, right? And so it serves its purpose. We may still have careers. We may still have, you know, personal lives, friends, and things that we spend time with. But ultimately, this hormone has served the function of having us prioritize looking after others. And so when the hormone that makes this super woman capacity for multitasking and emotional attunement, when that starts going haywire, it's fluctuating wildly with this overall decline. Our executive functioning, which is all our very clever kind of thinking-oriented stuff, the stuff that needs to go in order for us to make stuff happen and do stuff, that goes skew-if, whether you're an ADHDer or autistic or not. That's amplified for neurodivergent women. But nonetheless, if you're not neurodivergent, your executive functioning is still being negatively impacted by this wildly crazy hormonal picture that's going on with this overall decline. Our sleep goes to hell as well, as much as we might not want it to. And the amount of women that I've heard actually who have said to me, which has surprised me because I've not been a good sleeper ever, really, but I've had a lot of women lately say to me that they were always a really great sleeper and that they're now really struggling to sleep well long enough and deeply enough. And they're really, really struggling with it. And they would say, particularly because they've always been a good sleeper. They've never had to really, beyond those early baby years and stuff, they've never really had to kind of function well in life with poor sleep. So sleep goes to hell. And our emotional bandwidth shrinks. So, you know, there is a heck of a lot that's going on in perimenopause at the really kind of physiological, neurological level that impacts our capacity, our stress hormone, if we had no changes in our lives at all, if everything stayed the same in terms of the amount of stress it caused from when we are in perimenopause compared to when we're perhaps younger, younger women, not necessarily young women, but let's say in our mid-30s, even if everything stayed the same, we had no more stress than normal, just the very fact that we're now in perimenopause with this hormonal chaos that's going on, it does actually make us more susceptible and sensitive to stress and to have bigger, more noticeable stress responses. We need to understand that too. So that's a really kind of physiological Well, that's the physiology and, as I said, the neurology that's going on. It's an amazingly crazy time, but I don't want to leave you with that picture. I'm going to just add one thing, because I do want to say that it is it's like a renovation of our brain. And the end result is we get a more beautiful house, for example, at the end of it. But the process is really, really tricky. The time that we're going through it, or for the time that we're going through it, which of course can be so bloody long, is very difficult, because it is, and we are all over the place, hormonally, physiologically, neurologically. But I did want to mention that there's end in sight. So don't stop there. At the same time, though, there's a real psychological developmental process going on. Something deeper is waking up inside us. And that something deeper does actually, I truly believe it's kickstarted by this overall decline in estrogen, this hormone of accommodation and servitude. We actually start, well, it's not that we start, we stop being so driven to accommodate and serve others. We start refusing to keep carrying what's never been shared fairly. And in addition to all of that, we're also undergoing a massive identity renewal and shift. We're undergoing changes in our value system. We're undergoing changes in how we relate to other people, how we want to be in the world. Like, there is so much psychological change and spiritual change at this point in time as well. We start to have this sense of, I don't want to do this anymore. Although often it starts with, I can't do this anymore, because we're just so exhausted and overwhelmed. And I do know that sometimes when I first start working with women and they're telling me, I can't spin all the plates, I can't juggle all the balls anymore, they say that to me and they're like, and I want to be able to do all of that again. But as they move through this stage of life, and with the support, and I guess with the space to explore why they think they should be spinning all the plates, why they should be juggling all the balls, and with that increasing recognition of how much they'd been over-functioning and overdoing for everyone else, that I can't do this anymore thinking shifts into, I don't want to. I don't want to. It's this whole load, this invisible massive load with all these elements in it. It's actually just not mine to hold in its entirety on my own anymore. We wake up and our psyche prevents us from falling back to sleep again. And so it's not necessarily magnified and stays that way because we're permanently less capable. Although I do believe our capacity reduces for a period of time in perimenopause, and that's what creates the tension, or as I kind of call it, the disruption to our lives, to how we live our lives, and to who we are. It's magnified, and that magnification continues because in moving into the I can't, I'm not capable, and then sitting in that space, we actually start to challenge the Kool-Aid that we've been drinking, as I like to kind of refer to it. And what's that Kool-Aid? It is that messaging that we're supposed to be holding it all. We can finally see how much we've been carrying unfairly and often alone. Now, on top of that, it's also a time of life, and the research shows this, that for women, midlife is the most demanding period of our lives. We're managing children, teenagers or young adults, aging parents, other aging family members. Sometimes we're also taking on caring roles with friends. Our career responsibilities have often increased, so we're maybe more senior in our roles or whatever, and therefore more stress and responsibility comes with that. At the same time, we may actually be earning more than we ever have during this period of time. Not always, not everyone. I've certainly taken steps back and I definitely earn less than I did. But nonetheless, whether it's less or more, the expenses increase, the financial responsibilities are actually next level in midlife. So we've got all of this going on. At the same time, our own health is being kind of under threat with perimenopause in the sense that we feel less capable. We have hot flushes, we have night sweats, we have joint pains, we have heart palpitations. You know, things like our cholesterol can really increase and it can be happening for the first time in our lives. We can find that we're more prone to putting on weight, we're definitely more prone to feeling overwhelmed and having that stress response more easily activated. All of these kind of health-related issues impact our capacity as well. So our health changes, our own and others, and all of that requires more planning and emotional bandwidth. I often say that to be truly healthy is a full-time job. And who has time for a full-time job when the rest of our lives is already more than full-time in terms of demands and responsibility? We have the cumulative effect of decades of being the one who remembers, the one who anticipates, and the one who does. It has a huge emotional cost. And this is the kind of exhaustion that's not fixed just by a weekend away, you know, with lots and lots of sleep and rest and all the rest. This is a bone weariness that has been building for a long time. And in fact, many women that I work with start working with me in the context of true blue burnout or pretty damn close to burnout because of everything that they've been holding for such a long time. And suddenly their body and their minds and their hearts just give way and they can't do it anymore. And it's not something that a weekend or even a couple of weeks holiday fixes. Couple of weeks or a month off might have you recover to some degree, but if you return to the way of living that you were before, then you just invite that burnout more quickly again. And so there has been a lot of conversation actually lately, I've noticed, in the, you know, sphere of social media and things around how we experience perimenopause is very much contributed to how we've lived prior to that. And I remember my naturopath saying to me, perimenopause is a time when your chickens come home to roost. And by that, she meant you are burnt out and have been burnt out. And that's why you're kind of falling apart, literally. And that was a very true statement. So there's been this massive accumulation of exhaustion that's led to exhaustion that makes the invisible load, the mental load, the cognitive load, and the relational load even harder. Now, on top of that, let's talk about the relational load because it isn't one that is actually often referred to. The relational load relates to the efforts we make to keep our relationships going, to keep connection, to keep harmony. The interesting thing is, we know that a lot of women don't just carry their relational load for themselves in their relationships with their partners and their children. They certainly take primary, like they're the lead in those relationships. They often carry the relational load in the relationships that people they care about have with other people they care about. For example, they manage the emotional load between a child or a teenager and the other parent, who may well also be their partner. And the purpose of this, or the thing that we are, you know, designed and told from the get-go as girls and then as women, and this is what I refer to, and part of what I refer to when I talk about the Kool-Aid, is we are responsible for creating harmony, for reducing discomfort, to helping people not be inconvenienced, not be uncomfortable, all of those kinds of things. It's our job to do that. And so conflict in family systems, which is actually quite normal, there's many developmental stages where it's quite normal, and even conflict is normal between proper grown-ups, proper adults, as I call partners. Normal, normal, normal. There's a degree to which it's normal. Difference is normal. But what we find is women play an added role in worrying and turning their mind to and trying to create harmony between other people's in the relationships for the other people in the family systems. So not even just their own relationships. And that takes work. I'm really curious if that's something that you've heard about before and if you can now kind of relate to that, because it's often something when I talk about in therapy, women haven't thought of it or heard of it before. And yet when I kind of explain it, they're like, oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's something that I spend, you know, that takes up real estate in my head of how can I help create harmony between my partner and my teenager, or my partner and my parents, or my partner and my ex, you know, all of these kind of versions. So it's not just our relational labor in relation to our own direct relationships with people, although we tend to take the lead in that too. And in that context, we can often generate, particularly when it comes to the other adults, when we're doing the emotional labor in our relationship with our partners or with other adults in our lives, or we're helping them with their relationships, it can create a lot of resentment. Even when we love and care for these people, we can build resentment that we're holding this as well. In addition to this kind of stage of life and why this invisible load just feels extra, extra heavy and is often extra heavy, is because we're actually have been, and again, this is a bit of an extension of what I've previously said, we are the managers of everyone else's lives. And that means we can't often be the lead in our own. We are maybe the bottom of the list in terms of managing our lives, or managing our lives is done once all the building blocks for managing everyone else's lives is in place. And this means we lose ourselves. Who are we? What do we want? What do we think? How do we feel? These are the things that we lose are really our connection with. These parts of our self, capital S-E-L-F, self. I've often said that we spend a lot of time, in fact, the majority of our time, helping others to actualize their potential at the cost of actualizing our own. Now, don't get me wrong. There is certainly, when it comes to, I'm going to say two things. When it comes to having children, we have to do everything for them when they're little. And it's a really kind of subtle and nuanced process of what I call handing the baton over as our children get older. So if we think of the baton, carrying the baton of responsibility for someone else's life, of course, when they're little, we're holding the baton, we're doing it, we have to. That's just part of what being a parent of little ones is. As they grow up, at some stage, for some things, we want to perhaps share the baton with them. So there's this shared responsibility. And that might be teaching them to make their bed when they're in that primary school age. It may well be that we don't hand them the baton initially. We're sharing and holding the baton together because we need to teach them and they need to practice and they need to get guidance. And then eventually they take the baton themselves. They make their own bed. Yes, this is in an ideal world. And of course, then there's other parts of their own managing their own lives and things that we share the baton and then we hand the baton over to them. And the trick is we often hold on to that baton for a lot of things ourselves, not sharing it for longer than need be. And we may also then not hand the baton over to them for things that they are truly capable of being responsible for. So that's a tricky process, right? Because it requires an understanding of the individual child, their needs, their capabilities for all these different things and their, you know, kind of psychological and emotional maturity as well. So tricky, I get it. But what I also see is a lot of women holding the baton for teenagers and young adults for things where those teenagers and young adults really could be holding the baton themselves. In terms of our partners in particular, perhaps there's lots of stuff where we're ideally sharing. We should be both holding the baton, sharing the responsibility, but that doesn't happen. And so with this picture of holding lots of batons for people that could either be shared or given to them because it's ultimately now their responsibility, you know, I think it doesn't create space for us to actually sit back and think, well, what do I want in my life? What's meaningful, fulfilling? Where can I create space in my life to even discover that? This isn't a personal failing. This exists because of the Kool-Aid, the systemic gender roles and expectations. Social conditioning makes women feel responsible for others' comfort, safety, and happiness. We must not inconvenience others. We must not cause them discomfort. And if anything else has caused them discomfort, even if it's not us that's caused them discomfort, we must step in and try and make them comfortable. And, you know, again, I want to bring us back to the cognitive load, the emotional load, and the relational load. Because I often start talking, or women start talking about these kinds of things with me in session, and they may say, but my partner's really helpful. You know, he does this, he does that, he does this, he does that. A lot of them are the implementation of the task, of the things that need to be done. Fabulous. But their partners aren't sharing the cognitive load or the emotional load or the relational load. Not always, like sometimes, of course, but these are the things to ask yourself. Is there some degree of fairness in you, in your family system and with your family members, given the roles that they have and the ages that they are as well? Thinking of kids now, is there a fairness around who's holding the cognitive, emotional, and relational and practical load of being a part of a family? What bits have you been holding? And the really tricky thing is, it's hard to put down. And I often talk about how family systems work as being like a dance. And everyone's learned certain kind of dance moves. We know who does what, who moves when, all that kind of stuff. And so when women want to change things, very understandably, very reasonably, to make them fairer, basically, sometimes the response is no way. Sometimes the response is, yeah, okay, because it's kind of like impossible to have a rational reason to say no. But the actual changing that happens is limited because it's hard. It's actually hard for people to change when it actually is going to inconvenience them. I think Brené Brown has been known to say something along the lines of the people who find you setting boundaries most difficult are the ones who benefited when you didn't set them. And interestingly, they're often the people that we live in our family home with. It's hard for them to change because it's going to inconvenience them. It's going to increase their load. And so there's not this enthusiastic response with enthusiastic follow through when we start trying to make these changes. And so it is really, really difficult. And when there's that overt pushback or the I just forgot or the just not doing or the eye rolling or the grunting or stomping or, you know, that kind of thing, when we feel that it's going to rupture the relationship. And remember, we've been primed to not only ensure relationships stay harmonious for ourselves with others and for others, we're also primed to make sure nobody else feels uncomfortable. The guilt kicks in. And it is a really difficult thing to shift and redistribute this invisible load because of that. Really, really difficult. And that's where it's really important to have a cheer squad around you. So whether you've got friends who can consistently support you in setting these boundaries And while you'll cave sometimes, and I know I still do, you know, there's times when I'm like, oh, for God's sakes, you know, so-and-so hasn't done what I, you know, what is their chore or whatever. And I will be like, oh, for God's sakes, I'll just do it because I can't cope with this mess, or it's quicker, it's easier. Of course, we will all still fall into those kind of moments, but we need a cheer squad so that those moments become less and less. And sometimes we also need therapy to change the patterns, not just, you know, lift the veil of the shitty messaging we've received and really start to challenge that. That can require professional support, but also to be changing the patterns of this self-sacrifice, of this unrelenting standards, of this fear of failure, of this fear of relationship rupture. And these patterns typically, when they show up at this stage of life, it's because they've typically been been relevant throughout all of your life. And you've done lots of things that are so now innate to you and automatic, lots of things to avoid relationship ruptures, avoid being criticized, avoid failure or anything close to that. That it's automatic, but it's really, really hard to see and to change. And so that's when people often come and see people like myself. So this is what I hope is this has given you lots of food for thought. There's going to be parts of this that are not new to you. You would have seen lots of people and commentary in social media land and amongst friends and family and with, you know, women particularly, about this invisible load, which is made up of that cognitive, emotional, relational, and practical kind of stuff. I'm sure it's not new, but I hope that, you know, unpacking it that little bit more and explaining why it gets amplified during this period of time more than it often ever has before, I hope that's been helpful for you. And I hope that you also have had the message that it is hard and that we all need some help to do that. What type of help, you know, varies across or varies from person to person, from woman to woman, but it is tough. Change is tough. Humans don't like change. And when the change that we want is going to inconvenience or create discomfort for other people in our lives, and yet they have to kind of come on board in order for us to make these changes, it's really even harder. But it is doable in small, bite-sized chunks. Do it in small ways. And know that particularly the midlife experience of reduced capacity enables us to, while I don't want any woman to suffer, it does create the opportunity. It pulls us up short. It's a circuit breaker. It disrupts us so that it gives us this opportunity to then start to do things differently, start to think about things differently. That's really what I'd like you to take from this. Now, if the invisible load has been crushing you and you're ready to start making changes, even small ones, then my program Want can help. It's about putting yourself back on your own list. Number one, whoa, oh my God, that probably had so many of you kind of shivering at the idea. And maybe the word selfish even came up, because that tends to come up when we think about prioritizing ourselves. But it is a program about deciding and being discerning about where you spend your time and your energy and where you place your attention next. And for some women, they're really starting right from scratch because they have no idea what they want. Some might have a sense of it and need some help to kind of fully flesh it out and make it, you know, really clear and then act on it. Others are clear, but they need some help acting on it. So lots of the women that have joined Want so far have come to the program at very different stages, and Want can help you at any stage you're at. But I will add, it is a program that I refer to as the first tiny rebellion. So please don't think or be overwhelmed and think that the program is about making massive changes in your life, because some people may want that, but many of us don't, many and can't. Many of us need to make small changes first, even if it's one small change. And that's where we need to start, and Want will support you to do that. So in wrapping up this conversation, I'd love you to think about what's one thing on your invisible load list that you could hand over, the baton, right? So what baton could you share and hold with somebody else? Or what could you actually just hand over? Because ultimately, it's their responsibility and they're capable. Where could you do that? What's one thing that you could, where you could do that? I'd love to hear any feedback about that. So please reach out and let me know. Now, that's it for this bite of Midlife Truth. If this episode hit home, share it with a friend who's carrying a load of which people probably can only see a very, very small proportion because so much of it is invisible. That is the point. Next time, we're talking about self-renegotiation, the art of rewriting your own rules in midlife, and why this is such a critical part of the disruption and the reckoning. Thank you so much for joining me. You've been listening to Midlife Bites. If you liked what you heard, hit follow so you don't miss an episode. And if you have a minute, please leave a review. It really helps other women find the show. If you want to share your experience of the midlife bite, or you're an expert who can speak to the delights of it, please email me at kirsten@allabouthercentre.com.au and I'll be in touch. You can also head to our website, allabouthercentre.com.au, to find a practitioner who can support you through midlife. Or if you're a therapist, check out what's included in our health professional membership. We'd love to have you on board. Either way, remember, midlife isn't here to break you, it's here to remake you.